Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
What I've found about marriage, I think anybody can agree that we don't realize when we get married what the person who we're married is truly like. Even the today's thing that, you know, you say, well, live together, and then you think, no, that's a delusion too. Until you actually go away, you've signed paper, you've committed yourself for life, then you find out what you really have. And this is not a put down to anybody that might be here who is right now in the stage of falling in love and getting engaged. That's a wonderful time. That's a wonderful part of the story. But you got to understand that it's a time when we're a bit delusional. You know, we're not really being completely honest with ourselves because we're trying to win somebody's heart. And so we put our best foot and best face forward. And then we get married and we let our guard down. And we find out that we marry people with issues. They have things about them. They have quirks about them, and you just kind of figure it out. To kind of set the stage for that, I'd like to show you a quick little video that kind of shows a married couple realizing that they're going to have a hard time communicating here and be on the same page. Watch this.
It's just, there's all this pressure, you know. And sometimes it feels like it's right up on me, and I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless, and I don't know if it's going to stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me most, is that I don't know if it's ever going to stop.
Yeah. Well, you do have a nail in your head.
It's not about the nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there.
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing.
You always do this. You always try to fix things when what I really need is for you to just listen.
See, I don't think that is what you need. I think what you need is to get the nail.
See, you're not listening now.
Okay, fine. I will listen. Fine.
It's just, sometimes it's like, there's this achy, I don't know what it is. I'm not sleeping very well at all. No, the sweaters are just mad. I mean, all of them.
That sounds really hard.
It is. Thank you. Ow!
Come on, if you would just
don't.
That's what it's like. I mean, you just don't, you just think something is so obvious to the other, and then we have all these conflicts. And we just have to spend the rest of our life trying to figure out how to do this balancing act and deal with each other's issues, because we're all unique people. We come to marriage with nuances about us that when they come to the surface, it can kind of grate against the person we marry. And we know all about this because I married an angel, and she married an idiot. Now, she didn't know that before we got married because I was really trying to do a good job of telling her that, you know, I could go the journey with her. And then we got married, she found out that, for instance, I like to go down marked dead-end roads just to make sure that they truly lead nowhere. I want to make sure I'm a ready-shoot-aim type of guy. Married to a girl that likes to be much more careful and deliberate about life. Maybe that's why I married her. I'm a man whose dreams are often eclipsed by his ability to make those dreams come true. We struggle, don't we? I have a hard time seeing little things in front of me, like my car keys or my cell phone. I can't see it, and she has to find them for it. Although she sometimes has a hard time seeing big things right in front of her, like a tree as wide as the front of the car. But we're not going there. We'll just stay away from that for now. The point is, we struggle. We have issues when we get married. And so, because of that, we think, well, I want to make sure we do this right, and we're Christians, let's say, and we want to have a nice Christian marriage, and so we think that the way you go about this is you go to the standard passages in the Bible that weigh in on marriage, and kind of see if they can give us any insight into how to do this. And we go to Ephesians 5 and learn about meeting and submitting, and 1 Peter 3 about weaker vessels and prayers being blocked and all that stuff. So I want to tell you something. Although those passages have a lot to offer us, many times those passages just are passages. They give us things to do that don't really change anything. Because those passages, if they're not done with a tenderized heart, a heart that's ready to submit to God and let his love come through us, then they can actually become weapons in our hand. And I've seen couples actually take the very things in those passages and use them against each other. You're supposed to be the spiritual leader of this house and this marriage. And what's your problem? I mean, why don't you step up your game? You're just really annoying me. Or, well, you're supposed to submit. The last time I saw that, you know, never. And we just go back and forth. Those passages, I think the reason many times those passages are either just information or they do more harm than good is because we don't realize those passages appear in a grander narrative. And that grander narrative has a theme to it that those things have to be taught in and submit to. And that grander theme is a love story between God and the people that he created. And it's defined by his heart of grace. God is a gracious God. And he wants us to reflect his heart of grace when we, in our relationship, and most importantly, the relationships closest to us. And when it comes to close relationship, there's nothing closer than the relationship between a man and a woman in marriage. Now, we don't have time to go into it, but the book Grace-Filled Marriage unpacks an entire model of what grace looks like lived out inside a marriage. And this house here is just a little thing that we often use with people to teach. Once again, we're not going into it in this focal here, but the book does, and it just shows you that God's grace comes, he shows us grace at four different levels. He meets our driving inner needs, he sets our hearts free, he builds our character and our core muscles of strength, and then he aims us, the root there is aiming us at something bigger than life, something eternal, something bigger than ourselves, true greatness. And so I would encourage you, if you really want to understand what God's grace looks like lived out inside of marriage, that resource there could be a big help to you. That's what that's all about. Because I think too often we limit the discussion of God's grace to salvation. That's the way we Christians tend to see it. I was saved by grace. I once was lost, now I'm found. I was blind, now I see. And so we see God's grace in this incredible work of drawing us to him through his death on the cross. And then that's all the further we take it, and then we go on a performance basis with God. And we look at all those passages. Okay, what do I do? What's your role? What's my role? And all that. And I think we get off course. And as long as God's grace isn't in place, then we're still in the driver's seat. We're still controlling all the dynamics. And I have found that in that, we tend to look at our spouse through some lenses. And these lenses determine our perception of what we're seeing. And so I would like to show you a couple of the standard lenses that I see couples looking through. The first one is the me lens. The me lens. Now, this looks like a tinted piece of glass. You all can see me through that, can't you? Looks like a tinted, it is a tinted piece of glass on that side. But on this side, it's a mirror. This is mirrored glass, like they use in interrogation rooms at a police station. So if I'm using this to look at my wife Darcy through, then everything in this marriage is all about how it affects me, and what she does is what's in it for me. This is a lens. When you're looking through this lens, you use a lot of personal pronouns that are supposed to be thought of as a collective. You talk a lot about my dreams, my goals, my stuff, my money, my kids, my space, my time, instead of ours. And so it's not uncommon for even Christian people to look through this lens in marriage. Let me set that right up there. A second type of lens that's notorious to show up in our marriage is this one, the love-if lens. And this is a tinted piece of glass. This is the love that has a lot of conditions attached to it. In other words, you'll receive it when you do certain things. And sometimes this is a reaction to somebody looking at you through the me lens. It's a reaction of having to deal with so many broken promises. And so you feel justified in putting conditions on it. And another thing that I think causes Christians to do this is they often think that this is the kind of love God's showing them. Conditional love. They think that the love that he's going is going to, either going to get more of his love if they behave, and they're going to get less if they don't. That is a flaw. That is not what the Bible teaches. It never is taught that. His love is supreme and complete, and he's not offering to us based on how we behave. He's offering to us because he loves us. He's a God of grace. Now, his blessings may be determined by our behavior and our actions, but his love never is. And yet we do this in marriage too often, even as married people. And then the third one, by the way, this one's the most sinister one of all. This is the pious lens. The pious lens. Pious is a word meaning I'm very religious. I use spirituality to get my way. I can use the verses of the Bible to manipulate my spouse. I can drop God's name. God really, I've been praying, and he's really laid it on my heart that you need to open your eyes to some things, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we end up using the Bible once again as this kind of a hammer to hit our spouse with, and we feel so justified because it sounds so right and so religious. You know, it's interesting. I don't have a hard time convincing somebody of their self-absorption. Their self-focus. I don't have a hard time convincing people of their self-protection. I have a hard time convincing Christians of their self-righteousness. But we can be very self-righteous, especially with the people closest to us. Well, God wants us to move beyond that. And so, to get beyond that, we say, well, I want to turn over a new leaf. I want to get this right. But the problem with most Christian couples is that we're trying to have a good marriage, but we're still trying to have it in our own power. We want to do it our way. We want to solve it. Oh, well, I'll just go off and I'll go to a marriage conference or something like that. And give me the checklist, tell me the right things to do, and I'll start doing that for once. But we stay in the driver's seat, and that still leaves us at the mercy of these kind of attitudes with God and with our spouse. I believe if love is all you're depending on in your marriage, you're going to run out of ideas and resolves sooner and more often than you prefer. I don't know how many weddings you all have attended, but I haven't attended a lot. But I've been to enough, and I've officiated over some. And I've always been impressed with how much love is standing at the front of the church or out on the golf course or wherever we get married, out in the park. The couple is crazy in love with each other. And then I run into them 5 years later, or 10 years later. And I think, what happened? Well, life came at them. It got weathered. That love got weary. It might have gotten brittle. And maybe even stale and indifferent. And then you say, well, what do you need to do to get to anything? We need to jumpstart our love. We need to reactivate our love. We need to do some of the things that gets our love back. Well, what would that be? Well, we'll go have a romantic getaway, or we'll go to a Christian conference on marriage, or we'll start studying the Bible about marriage and things like that. And I'm thinking, that's not going to do anything. It might give you a little temporary reprieve here, but it's not going to change anything long term, because you had plenty of love when you got married. You had plenty of it. So if you don't change something major in your life, you're just going to be right where you are right now. The missing ingredient in marriage isn't love. It's grace. It's grace. It's God's transforming grace that we need in our life. Grace is the missing piece and the place to start. Our love for our spouse must be compelled by grace. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 5. For Christ's love compels us, because we're convinced the one died for all, therefore all died. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. So then, from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. Old has passed away. The old is gone. The new has come. And he has committed us to the message of reconciliation. If we have God's power and presence and his mercy and his love center stage in our heart where it's supposed to be, then what should be happening most of all in our marriage is our love getting stronger and better, because it is clothed in the armor of God's grace. And so what we need to do is we need to get this lens that we look to, the grace lens. And let me tell you, I can describe the grace lens. Did I do it backwards? That was kind of fun for a while. Okay, the grace lens. And I can define God's grace in one sense. It's just treating your spouse the way God treats you. It's treating your spouse the way God treats his spouse, which is the church in the Bible. And God's love for us must be the driving force in our life. And one of the ways we do that, obviously, is through prayer and reading our Bible and fellowship. But it's not to be to learn about him and to know more about him, but to know him, to have fellowship with him, and to love him. Because I believe God has chosen marriage as the highest example of his creation, the apex of civilization, the summit of humanity's stories. To illustrate this, I wanted to mention to you that at the top of major mountains in the world, if you climb one, you would probably find one of these. This is called a benchmark. And this one here is El Diente Peak, and it's in the southwestern corner of Colorado. Colorado has over 50 peaks that are over 14,000 feet in the air. I don't know what that would be in meters, but it's very high. And so the U.S. Geological Survey has the people make these things, and these are made out of brass. Now, brass is a combination of two elements, copper and zinc. They take copper and zinc, and they bring them to a temperature of 2,300 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is, Celsius, but it's hot. And they melt down, and they meld together, and they become something. They become something. When they meld together, they become brass. And when they become brass, they become something that they never were as copper and zinc. And they develop qualities they did not have as copper and zinc. For instance, copper is all metal is malleable. You can form it. But copper has a malleability that is stronger and more reliable than either copper or zinc. Brass does. On top of that, there's acoustic qualities to brass. We make bells out of brass. Think if you know anything about the orchestra or played an instrument, think of the brass section and all the music that comes from that. The percussion section has a lot of brass things, the cymbals and stuff. And so there's that. Brass has a high tolerance for friction, so we use it to make gears and tumblers inside of locks. And hinges. It's also antimicrobial. Dangerous pathogens cannot exist on brass, and so they use it in hospital rooms and in operating rooms to keep germs from harming people. And on top of that, it's weather resistant. It can take extreme highs of temperature and go down to freezing lows, and it's not affected by that. It can take the winds and the hits and the sleet and the hard stuff. And as you know, at the top of those mountains, that happens all the time, and radical changes in weather. And in the same way, God has chosen marriage, and he's put it at the pinnacle, the high point of civilization. And he put it up there because he wants to mold us into his image and put us there through marriage. And many times, he has to bring up the heat in our marriage, the stress, the problems, where we have to turn to him. And he wants to give us a new song of his love story to sing as a married couple that we never could sing quite the same way as single people. And he wants to create a marriage that our children can hide safely behind us in the security of our home and our love through the locks and the things that we make there. And he wants to give us a higher resistance to the dangers of sin and temptation through marriage. And then be able to withstand all those incredible changes in culture. And so marriage is more important than we thought. And so we need to have God's love and mercy center stage. Now, to close this all off, I think we made the point that marriage is important. I think we see that it's real easy to look through some lenses that really undermine God's ability to work in our marriages. And it's because we tend to be selfish people. We just are. And the thing that alters selfishness is when we surrender ourselves over to God and we let God take over our life. And it's not just what we know and all the doctrine and stuff like that, the information we know about it, but God's power, his presence, his person, that we have fellowship with him. And we let him have our heart. Because until we do that, then, once again, we're always going to struggle. Well, to illustrate, I'd like Darcy to come up here, because I think no matter how well-intended we are, we still even want to do the right spiritual things in our own power. We still do. We're just like that. This may be a really clever illustration or the worst thing you've seen at European Leadership Forum to date. But the hardest part of it is right now. We've got to get some, blow these up. Okay, let's say these balloons represent Darcy and myself. And we come to that point in our life where we say, you know, this is ridiculous. By the way, when we got married, we packed these three lenses with us. You know, these top three. Well, we knew how to pull them out, and we kept them close. We could switch them, whatever worked best for us. Whether it's the me lens or the love fifth lens or whatever. And yet, if you looked at it, you'd think, what a nice couple. And aren't they a nice Christian couple? And we had a nice highlight reel and nice memories made. But up close and personal, we weren't close to being what we could be if we'd let Jesus have his way and own our hearts. And so let's say we get to the point where, well, okay, enough's enough. We got to change. And I say, you know what? I am so tired of looking through Darcy at that me lens and robbing her of all the respect and the honor that she deserves.
And I'm not proud of what I've been doing to Tim, looking at him through that prideful love-if lens. He didn't sign up for that, and goodness knows God expects a whole lot more from me.
And I'm a professional using that pious lens to use God and spiritual things to kind of get my way.
I'm no amateur at that myself, but you know what? I'm going to change, starting right now, by trying harder to do all the right things.
Me too. I just think I need to work a lot harder at this. And I'm going to start, you know what I'm going to start? I'm going to start reading the Bible every day.
And I'm going to start to journal about being a better spiritual partner.
And I'm going to get in the men's group down at the church and have some of those guys kind of hold me accountable for being such an idiot.
And I think I will try doing that compliment your spouse thingy three times a day that we learned about at the women's retreat.
And I'm going to stop whining about all those shoes she thinks she has to have to compliment her outfit.
I'll do my best to not roll my eyes when Tim and his ADHD get a hold of the remote control.
And I don't know the point of this, but for crying out loud, I'll finally give up. I'll take the long walk on the beach, even though no man in his right mind would ever want to do something as dumb. I mean, what's the point of it? Why can't we race up? Can we time ourselves and see how we did compared to yesterday?
Well,
but I'll do it.
Okay. Well, you know what I'm going to do? It will be really hard. But I am going to get my entertainment life under control. I'm going to erase all those recorded TV episodes of The Real Housewives of the European Leadership Forum.
And finally, you say, it is not worth it.
Too hard. It's just too hard.
We try, but it's just not worth it. Let's try something else. All right. Those balloons, what were they filled with? Hot air.
Whose hot air?
Whose?
Ours.
Ours. They were still filled with us. They weren't filled with the power and presence of Jesus' Spirit. We were Christians. We believed all the right things. But we still wanted to run our Christian life on our terms and even fix our marriage spiritually on our terms. And God comes along and says, let me take my rightful place in your life and own your life. Drive the bus in your life. And until we do that, we're just playing games. And I've seen people go to, you know, because we speak at marriage conferences, and they leave with so much good intention. And then it's just a matter of time when they are right back to the same old habits because the problem is that they never really let Jesus own their life. And it's a game we play forever in the Christian life. And so when you hear people talking over and over in your devotional life, it's not about you. It's never been about you. It's about Jesus and the cross and what he did for us. And until we let him have his rightful place, we will just lose and lose and lose. Any questions about
it? So I don't mean just that you would just stop trying or...
But because it wasn't going to work. We were running out of steam because of our own energies.
Well, actually, we would probably do some of the same things, but we would do them through the power of God's grace, God working in us And that would give us the power and the strength rather than us trying to muster our own strength all the time. But we would go to marriage conferences. We would maybe go on a romantic weekend. You know, we would go to a counselor maybe. But we would do it because of Christ's love for us and because of his love for us, our love for our spouse.
Yeah, you see, we still live the Christian life on our power. And he said, no, it's my spirit that I want filling you. And see, when his spirit fills us, when he overtakes us, his grace just comes out. And then you don't have to be reminded to be kind. You don't have to be reminded to forgive. You don't have to be reminded to look at your spouse, not for what's wrong with them, but seeing what's good about them and also what all their high-end potential. What other observations do you have about marriage? How many of you work with people, with married couples? Anybody working here? Yeah. And what do you find in your dealing with them that are some of your biggest challenges?
I think one of the hardest things for us is when we try to explain the concept of grace, they seem to get it, but then they go home and immediately fall back into the old habits and old roots. And so we had to, it's not one time grasp it all thing, right. It's more of a process than anything else.
You know, I think grace is a journey. You know, it's a relationship. Just like in marriage, we want to fall more and more in love with each other. I think it's the same thing with Jesus, but I don't see how that's done if we're only doing drive-by Bible reading. You know, we're only stopped by and see him every once in a while with the scriptures. And let me say something. If you're in Christian work, you're going to be in the scriptures just because you're in Christian work. We have to prepare lessons or things like that. I'm not talking about that time in the Bible. I'm talking about just us and Jesus, us and the Lord. And I had a major turn in my life with the Lord and the Word when I remember when I first started out, some guy said, I don't go through my day until God has fed me well from his Word. And so I thought, well, that sounds great. He said, I don't eat breakfast until I felt I've gotten a good nourishment from the Word. So I thought, well, that sounds great. It sounds real righteous and all. So I thought, I'm going to do that. So I was going to school hungry because I was skipping breakfast because I didn't get anything from the Word that morning. Have you ever been like that where you get in the Word and just nothing jumps out at you? You don't feel like... But once again, that agenda was all about him. And it would be all about me. You got to feed me, Lord. And then when I changed, I said, Lord, I'm going to spend time in this Word, and you don't have to teach me anything. You don't have to show me anything. I just love you, and I just want to be with you. And I just want to be with you, and I'm just going to spend time in your Word. And when I did that, took all that pressure off. It's funny, now the Word started coming at me, and God started showing up more in his presence. So that, and I think worship is a key part of relationship with Jesus in our marriage, and then I think prayer, obviously, prayer as a couple, prayer as an individual, and I don't want to be legalistic about it, but those are the fundamentals of relationship. Just like in a marriage, if we don't talk with each other, spend time with each other, and all, we're kidding ourselves. We're going to be close. What other questions or anything about the lenses or grace? Do you understand what we mean by grace? You know what a lot of people confuse grace with? Nice. Nice. The word nice? The credit card?
Yeah, the credit card.
Oh, the credit, okay. There you go. Let's get a credit card out of here. I think in marriage it's really easy to, once again, get our priorities wrong. Let's say this represents something about your spouse that really bothers you, really annoys you. Interpret for her. This right here represents something about your spouse that really makes you, it just annoys you and irritates you. Maybe your husband takes his dirty boots off and just throws them, you know, and he just leaves them there. Or the wife, she does everything nice, but it always seems like her bathrobe is thrown somewhere or something like that. Or they talk too much, or they don't talk enough. Or they always, whatever. So let's say, now, I'm going to ask you a simple question. It is not a trick question. Can I see you? I can see you very well, can't I? Now can I see you? Did this change size? No. Just as little as it always was. But if it's all we're focusing on, it's all we'll see. We can have a wonderful spouse that really cares for us and really is wanting to serve and pull their weight and be good. But because this one thing that we're so focused in on and annoyed by, that's all we look at. They don't have a chance. They don't have a chance. By the way, I think it's cruel when we do this. I think it's cruel. And yet, I think we do it all the time. Now, my question is this. Does God do that with you? Does God do that with you? And the answer is no. No, he never does that. Does God look at you through the me lens? Or the love if lens? Or the pious lens? No. He looks at you through the lens of grace. And so a grace-filled marriage is, why don't we look at our spouse the way God looks at us? Why don't we treat them the way he treats us? Okay, she's saying, sometimes it's hard to give grace because we don't feel it from God. Sorry. What do you think, why do you think we wouldn't feel it? What would block us from feeling it?
Maybe because we have bad parents. We have some bad experience.
Mm-hmm. Bad experiences?
Life, yes. Mm-hmm. And because we have a bad picture of our father or mother. And
yes.
We project those.
Yeah, they project that into our life.
Yes.
Maybe our family of origin, our parents, they gave us a bad view of what that does. In fact, let's just assume for most people that happens. And, you know, there are no perfect parents out there. Some are really struggling and others whatever. And then maybe something bad really happened to us, something unjust or unfair and all that. But then would you have a problem feeling his forgiveness for your sins if you wanted to give your heart to Jesus to become a Christian? Okay. Well, you see, I think that's why that's where we limit grace. Just in the same way that we sense I've been forgiven and he's gonna let me go to heaven. He's put his spirit inside of me. At that moment we feel saved. He said, but what I think we do is we go back on our own steam. You know, we try and do it this way or whatever. We go back and we say, okay, now I've gotta perform for him, I've gotta impress him, I gotta do things. And that's all bad theology. In other words, I think we have been told a lot of bad theology. And so that goes back to our view of God. And so we think God is disappointed in us, or he's going to withhold certain things from us, like his love. And maybe if we had a dad that withheld love if we didn't do the right things. And we think our heavenly father is like, but he's not.
Have a lot of experience from other Christians who accepted us with the grace.
Yeah.
We have to be connected with each other, of course with God, but with each other. Maybe in some churches we connect with a person who live by law.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. She's talking about we need other Christians that kind of treat us graciously and show us what that's like, but that's a problem, isn't it? Do you know that I speak in churches all over, mainly in the U.S., and I go out different places and I speak. I have been in two churches. One of them is very famous, and it has the word grace in its name. There was no grace in that church. No grace. And I got in the inside of the staff, and I knew what it was like. You know, I was behind the curtain, and I thought, oh, man, I would not want to serve on this staff. You'd really have to guard your back if you worked here. You'd definitely not be able to be authentic and or share your heart. It could cost you. They keep notes here. They keep files. And I'm thinking, that is the opposite of God's heart. And so I think, once again, if we want to help get grace-filled marriages in our churches, we got to start getting pastors and worship leaders and Sunday school directors and small group leaders that clearly love each other and care for each other. That doesn't mean that we can't disagree on things. That doesn't mean that we can't make mid-course corrections, or if somebody's getting off course, we have to... That doesn't mean that. But we've got to have it. And I think until Jesus' mercy and grace is the what you feel when you come to church, to me, it doesn't matter what you're teaching. It's not going to really have that much effect. So you're right. That's a good observation. And then I think when you can get a couple that truly represent the grace of God to each other, look what that does for their children. The power that that transfers to them. Any other observations? She hears Darcy saying, you know, we want to do the right thing, but we want to do it in Christ's power. But how do you make that happen? What do you do on that? Okay? And I'll stand in where you can hear it pretty well. Go ahead.
Well, I think you have to start by looking to God. A lot of times what happens is that our view of God is too low, and our view of man is too high. And so if we switch that around, where if we understand how great and good and gracious our God is, and we start to understand, and then we also realize how low we are, then God shows us grace, and our natural reaction to him, once we realize how good and powerful he is our natural response is to love him and just enjoy him and start to treat his others the way he does. We start to love other people the way he loves them. And that's our natural response once we get a good view of who God really is and who we really are.
One of my balloon things was compliment my spouse 3 times a day. I learned it at a women's retreat. Well, you know, you might be able to go maybe 15 days and think of 3 things you can, and then you get to the point and you think, I don't even like him today. How am I going to try to compliment him? And then God can bring to mind through his grace. You remember, you were not very lovable when I found you. Will you remember how I pursued you and loved you? This is your husband that I provided for you. Now, let's compliment him. And you know, God reminds us, takes us back to the cross where we received our forgiveness, and we're so much more willing to give forgiveness and love.
Mm-hmm. Our God is a God of redemption. A lot of times it's our spouse that hurts us the most. And yet, God can take all those hurts and redeem them if we allow him to. And so over time, throughout my life experience, I've realized that God has taken all the bad things that have happened in my life, and if I let him, he'll redeem them back and allows me to experience more grace.
You know, have you ever heard this? Somebody goes to a marriage retreat and they're having trouble in their marriage, and they get some suggestions like give 3 compliments and have a cup of coffee every morning and talk and have a date every once a week, and they say, you know, and then they come back to a rocky time in their marriage and they come to a retreat and they suggest the same thing, and they'll say, oh, I did that. That doesn't work. Well, in much the same way, I'll hear that about the Christian life. I'll say, I tried trusting God, but that doesn't work. Or I tried doing it, it doesn't work. Here's the answer. Oh, yes, it does. Of course it works. If it's not working, it's not because it's not working, it's because we're not trusting him. We're not truly believing him. But we've got to be the kind of people that say, I am going to love my spouse like Christ loves his spouse. And let's use the church example. Christ loves the church because we're so lovable, right? Think about it. No. Is the church a collection of the nicest people you ever met? No, it's a bunch of messed up people like us It's the bruised, the battered, the broken, the belligerent. They show up. He says, that's what I love. And I keep loving them. And then as they keep coming and they keep growing in the Spirit and growing in the Word, and next thing you know, the Spirit starts to grow in them. And I just think the unique thing about walking by grace is we trust God. We trust Him that He will do a great work in us, and He will ultimately do a great work in our children and our spouse. And we trust Him. And whether it's showing up on the surface, we're not going to stop loving them. We're not going to stop being for them what they want us to be. I know it's abstract. I know it would be nice to have a 1, 2, 3, 4. If we just do these things, boom, wouldn't that be nice? But this is all about letting God come through us. In fact, let me close on this, and I see my time is up. I love God. I love Jesus, right? And so I want to take my love for Jesus, and I want to show it to Darcy. Does that sound good? It sounds good, but it's incomplete. It's flawed. Because here's the problem. I want to take my love for God and show it to Darcy. What's the problem? It's still my love. And what's the problem with my love? It's limited. It's mine. It's coming from my reserves. It's limited. Now, this is going to sound really abstract, but try and track me. It's not my love for God I want to give to Darcy. It's God's love for me that I want to give to Darcy. And if you can get that, just think on that for a long time. It's God's love coming through me to her, because His love is infinite. And He can help me when she's pushed all my buttons, or I'm tired, or I'm frustrated, or whatever, and vice versa. And then next thing you know, then you feel, I feel so thoroughly loved. I feel so, and then you just draw closer.